May it please the Court, Ronald E. Weldy of Weldy & Associates on behalf of Mrs. Hicks. Your Honor, this is an FLSA case with also an attached state claim for vacation wages. There were two different segments of employment, and I make that distinction because it makes a difference as to the two primary issues in the case. The allegations were that Ms. Hicks worked as a security guard, receiving cash only for a period of time from July of 06 through the opening of the hotel that was under construction, which opened as of October 30th of 06. That period of time has to deal with the question of whether or not the plaintiff did or did not establish enterprise coverage. So that's one of the issues. The second period of employment was from October 30th of 06 through her termination on, let me get you the correct date here, April 13th of 07, at which point in time Ms. Hicks worked as a front desk clerk and was actually receiving a paycheck. And the issue surrounding that period of time is whether or not the cash payments disclosed by defendant 20 days prior to the jury trial should have been allowed into evidence. And that's the first issue I will discuss. Your Honor, it's our position that we had to do a trial by ambush in this case with regard to this issue. We filed a motion in limine, not even knowing that that interrogatory number 12 was being supplemented on that exact same date, June 1st of 2010, to include new cash payments that fell between October 30th of 2006 and April 13th of 2007. By that deadline, plaintiff was required to know her case pursuant to the case management plan entered in this case. She was required to put on her final witness list. She was required to have all of her exhibits made up and done up and exchanged with the parties, and an exhibit list actually put into the trial court. There were other trial pleadings like the trial brief and motions in limine that were all required to be submitted by June 1st, 2010. Then, a day or two later, we get notice that defendants have tried or are attempting to supplement their response to interrogatory number 12 to add six new alleged cash payments that we had asked for back in 2008. We served interrogatories January 8th of 2008, and employer responded March 11th of 2008. So it's over 2 years later. Discovery has closed, obviously, by this time, and suddenly we're learning about something that appellee in their brief says was the central theme of their defense, i.e. these cash payments during the second half of her employment. When we filed the motion in limine saying, hey, we don't want any other cash payments coming in, we didn't even know these existed. We just said we just want to limit them to what they had already answered in Rule 12. Because Rule 12, interrogatory number 12 of our interrogatories, because that was central to the first part of the case. We knew she had been paid cash, and there was a discussion had she been paid the proper amount of overtime for that period from July of 2006 through the opening of the hotel. And so we just wanted to simply limit that's the only cash payments we're going to hear about. Suddenly, we're talking about new cash payments during a separate time period. And we feel that the district court abused the court's discretion in allowing those payments. And quite frankly, Your Honor, it's my recollection that Judge Stinson was newly assigned that case literally about 1 week prior to trial. So she had not been involved in the case up to that time. She was just got appointed from magistrate to a district court judge, and this was one of the first cases that was transferred. So I'm not trying to sit here and say that Judge Stinson was, completely out of the ballpark. She was brand new on the case. Mistakes do happen. And so it's our position that you simply cannot add evidence of this nature, which is central to whether or not there was an overtime claim during this time period, literally 20 days in advance of trial, and not severely prejudice the other side, particularly when you take into account the fact that on June 1st, the very same day that the supplementation was done, at that point in time, we had to know what case we were going to be presenting to the trial. And with this new evidence, there was no way we could possibly know what case we were presenting to the trial. The second main argument has to deal with the first part of the employment, and that has to deal with the question of whether or not the plaintiff submitted sufficient evidence to show that there was a common business purpose in order to get enterprise coverage underneath the FLSA. Now, Your Honors, the evidence shows that Mr. Felling, the court already found, district court properly found, common control of Felling Investments LLC, specifically the office building at 120 East Market Street, which Mr. Felling testified did at least $300,000 in revenue in both 2005 and 2006, and that Mr. Felling had control over Felling Hotels LLC, which he testified did at least $300,000 in business for in revenues for 2005 and 2006. The evidence also shows that Mr. Felling directed employees of both of these two entities, Felling Investments LLC and Felling Hotels LLC, to work together in the construction of what became Avery Dry LLC, the hotel that was being constructed, that my client was acting as the night security guard. And so it's our purpose, it's our argument, that the common business purpose that allows the revenue from these two different entities to be combined to meet the $500,000 revenue requirement required by the statute for enterprise coverage is the fact that the common business purpose of these two entities was to build said hotel that my client was, in fact, guarding at night. And that, you know, in essence, the evidence presented does allow a finding that there was a common business purpose and the revenue requirements of the statute have been met.
What's our standard of review of that issue?
I believe it's a legal issue, so it should be de novo, Your Honor, but let me check back and see what I put under standard review for that. Give me a second. Directed verdict. This was done by directed verdict.
I guess that's de novo, yeah.
Given that it's a legal conclusion, I would state that it would be de novo, Your Honor. I mean, whether or not we met the legal requirements of the statute is a legal conclusion based upon the facts, and so I would assert that would be de novo. But I don't see it in my brief. I apologize. I do know that we cited that in reference to the second argument that we make on that issue, which is Mr. Felling testified that it was possible that in either 2005 or 2006, the Felling Hotel LLC did over $500,000 in business. He simply couldn't remember for certain while on the stand during the course of the jury trial. And given the fact that it was a directed verdict and all inferences are supposed to be in favor of the plaintiff in that situation, it's our position that alternatively, if the court doesn't want to find that as a matter of law, Ms. Hicks established enterprise coverage, that question should have been posed to the jury, whether they believe that Felling's Hotel had done over $500,000 in business in either one of those years, based upon Mr. Felling's basic memory. Your Honor, I think the vacation claim is pretty well set forth in our brief. It's based upon Dye and Mold, which is a 1983 Indiana Court of Appeals case. I won't discuss it unless there's any questions. Save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weldon. Big.
May it please the court, good afternoon, Your Honor. Good morning, almost good afternoon. My name is Dylan Vine. I'm here on behalf of the defendants, Chance Felling and Avery Dre, LLC. I want to first make reference to some rebuttal points that Mr. Weldy had raised during his initial argument to the court. Yes, Judge, sorry. Some rebuttal points.
We'll have to keep your voice up. That only records, it doesn't amplify.
Thank you, Judge.
So you'll have to project.
I apologize.
No, that's all right.
Some rebuttal points concerning what Mr. Weldy had indicated with respect to the enterprise coverage specifically. And there is no doubt the transcript does say that the trial court did determine that there was at least a common control of these various entities. The salient issue before this court is the common business purpose. And what common
business... It's a little hard to me to see why there wasn't. They're both in the real estate business, it seems to me.
Yes, Your Honor, but when asked that same question...
I don't see why that changes the purpose very much.
But when asked that same question, Your Honor, Ms. Hicks, the plaintiff, by and through her counsel, responded when the district court was faced with that same question, when it had heard the ambit of evidence presented during Mr. Weldy's and his client's case in chief, indicated what is the common purpose, business purpose. The response was to make money, to make profit. Judge Stenson, and specifically in the short appendix on pages number 39, Bates number A, B to 42, makes reference to what evidence has been presented to this court that shows a common business purpose. The answer that was proffered by Ms. Hicks and her counsel was the common business purpose is to make money. That is clear. It's unequivocal. It is in the record. Today I hear for the first time on appeal, on review, that the common business purpose was to build hotels. Part of the issue before this court is this appeal and its procedural posture is up here on an in forum pauperis, and not all of the trial transcript is before the court. Mr. Weldy, by and through his client, requested that the transcript be provided at public funds. One of the issues that the defendants have, the appellees have, relative to this matter, is that only designated portions of the transcript are available for this court's review to determine the issues that have been raised. And in accordance with Appellate Rule 10b-3, Mr. Weldy and his client were required to file certain documents indicating that we are only providing this court with a limited transcript necessary to resolve these issues. Luckily, with respect to the arguments presented on the directed verdict, that is before this court. Five witnesses testified in a two-day jury trial in this proceeding, and this court has the sum and substance of one witness before it. In order to make a determination, as Your Honor pointed out, it seems as though there was common business purpose. And while I don't disagree that both of those business purposes involve real estate, the case that Judge Stenson had relied on found that both of those businesses involved restaurants. And the appellate court decision emanating out and that was cited in our respective brief indicates again that profit motive is not enough, and simply because you're linked in the same field does not mean you have the same common business purpose. With respect to the argument on the motion in Lemony, this case was...
Two brothers, aren't they?
They are two brothers. That is correct, Judge. And with respect to the motion on the preclusion of various evidence that was filed by the plaintiff on around June 1st, indicating that these cash payments were not properly tendered and or supplemented to his client and to his office, and then that resulted in a trial by ambush, I would merely note to the court the standard on review of that is whether or not Judge Stenson abused her discretion or the district court abused its discretion. Again, this court does not have the benefit of having the transcript of that argument before it that was presented at the final pretrial conference when the same or similar arguments were raised. The case was filed in 2007. In 2008, after a scheduling order and hearing had been conducted in the chambers of a magistrate, this case lay dormant for approximately 18 months. And it was the position of my clients not to prosecute from a defense standpoint. Obviously, in hindsight, perhaps that wasn't the wisest decision, but at least it was a frugal decision. When the case was finally reassigned in 2009, then it became relevant again. Mr. Weldy indicated to this court that at around the time that discovery closed, that occurred back in 2008. Why would we supplement discovery responses? Discovery had been finished long ago. I would just merely ask the court to take note that Mr. Weldy filed a motion to compel in May, indicating that the responses he received some 1.5 years previous were not, in his opinion, properly answered. We supplemented those answers on around June 1st And in the brief, there is a footnote indicating that Mr. Weldy did have knowledge of these six cash payments. More importantly, the issue of discovery and the purported untimeliness of these six payments was presented to the jury. The questions were asked, but it's not in the record. And again, we have issues where the plaintiff is asking the court to speculate. The plaintiff is asking the court to engage in conjecture. The plaintiff is asking this court to reverse the district court's ruling on only portions of the trial transcript and not a single exhibit that was entered into. With respect to the motion in limine, Mr. Weldy also states that he had to know his case by June 1st, 2010, consistent with the court order regarding the same. The appellees have cited to the portions of the record that on June 1st, 2010, after filing our trial brief, after filing our jury instructions, after filing our witness and exhibits list, Mr. Weldy filed a motion in limine and asked for an extension of time to file his jury instructions and his trial brief, indicating that he was too busy. That motion was subsequently denied, and Judge McKinney, who was assigned that case at that time, and Judge Stenson, with all due respect, conducted this jury trial with decorum. She knew the issues before it. She gave it its due course and its time. Since the inference has been made here today that somehow her being appointed at a proverbial 11th hour frustrated the plaintiff's position. On June 17, 2010, the issues raised by Mr. Weldy were raised to the district court at that time, and the district court determined that those cash payments would be allowed into evidence and presented to the jury. A sanction was imposed of $880 by the court, the district court, against my client, and was paid timely, consistent with the order to compel that occurred on around May 25th of 2010.
What part did the cash payments play in the directed verdict?
As I understand the cash payments in the directed verdict, the case involved two separate employment scenarios. Ms. Hicks' capacity as a security guard while the hotel was being built, and then once it opened for business to the public, then she was a front desk clerk. In terms of her position as a security guard, those cash payments were divulged timely. It was the issue of the overtime, which the jury went forward and heard all of these discovery issues as well. So there really is not a directed verdict issue as to these cash payments that are allegedly in question.
So that issue was really not for us, is it?
Judge, I never thought that it was, and the standard is, as the court well knows, with respect to that, that on motions in limine, that it's an abuse of discretion and left to the sound discretion of the trial court, the competence of the district court, to determine whether or not those payments should come in. We're talking six payments. And a lot of it has to do by the dilatoriness exhibited by both parties in this particular case. But notwithstanding, it did go to jury trial, and eight members of the community heard all these issues. That is undisputed.
We're just sitting on a directed verdict.
On the directed verdict as to the enterprise coverage and specifically the common business purpose. And again, five witnesses were called in this case, a key witness being obviously the plaintiff, but the court does not have the luxury of that transcript in front of it to make a very thorough determination. It makes an inference only based on the evidence provided to it through Mr. Felling's direct testimony and also through his cross-examination. And that is the only portion of the trial transcript that is before this court. In terms of the vacation pay, Mr. Weldy indicated that he is not dealing with that issue. We would only mention that there is not a scintilla of evidence before this court in the record indicating the vacation pay, what the trial testimony was, other than orders issued by the court that are made part of this record, in which Judge Stenson indicates specifically in document 111 that it is undisputed that the plaintiff testified that she did not accrue and or was eligible for vacation time past the one-year mark. And I note that the court may have some concern with the enterprise coverage, but would also say as a corollary to that, that again, Judge Stenson and the district court found that there was common control.
Okay.
But when asked what the common business purpose was, because as a matter of law, she found the businesses separate and distinct based on the evidence presented. So she went to the next step and said, what is the common business purpose? What evidence do you have? And the answer was, they're both in business to make money. Short appendix 39, 39A and 39B. We would ask respectfully, Your Honors, that this court affirm the district court on all of its decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just wanted to point out, I know it's mentioned in my brief, the motion to compel that was filed did not address rule interrogatory number 12 whatsoever. So there was no duty on behalf of the defendant in complying with the order on the motion to compel to supplement interrogatory number 12. I also want to mention that the importance of the six alleged and newly provided cash payments were that they, in essence, explained each of the times that we had documentary evidence showing that Ms. Hicks worked overtime during the period from October 30th of 2006 through her termination April 13th of 2007. So, you know, all of a sudden we get new evidence that they're trying to say, hey, we paid her, even though all the documents that we had, the entire case, the entire time the case was pending, except for the last 20 days, show that, in fact, that she had not been paid. So those six cash payments were very, very vital. They were the entire...
Well, they didn't have anything to do with the directed verdict, though.
No, Your Honor, they had nothing to do with the directed verdict. They had everything to do with what the issue that was presented to the jury. I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That's what we're here for, is the directed verdict, isn't it?
No, the appeal addressed the denial of the motion in limine with regard to those six cash payments and the rulings of the court as to the directive verdicts. There's three different issues presented, Your Honors. Thank you.
Okay. We appreciate the arguments. We thank counsel, and the case is taken under advisement.
Thank you.
Court will stand in recess.